Hello all, and welcome to another episode of Goddess Talks. I'm very, very excited to bring you today an interview, a discussion I had with Laura Hirch. Laura Hirch is the CEO and founder of Women Embodiment Films, and she is the filmmaker behind the documentary From the Goddess. It's a docu-series that has 6 episodes that is so excellent and so well done. I binged the entire series in one day. And so I approached her about talking about this with us because I think it's just so important to continue making documentary, to continue interviewing and recording many of the goddess teachers, activists, collectors of archaeology and research and all of those things. And we had a wonderful talk. And so I hope that you will enjoy this talk as much as we enjoy talking. We've talked repeatedly about both this season with the 6 episodes and the upcoming seasons of the series, which will continue. And so I hope that you enjoy this episode. All of the information on Laura is in the description. Please check out her docuseries. Totally worth seeing, binging, watching, enjoying, sharing, etc. And I will see you all on some new episodes that are in store coming up real soon. Enjoy. Yay. Okay. Hello, Laura. Welcome
Hi, to Carla.
Goddess Project and Goddess Talks.
Thank you so
much. I'm very, very excited to talk about your documentary series. I think we should talk about your documentary series first, but then anything that you want to talk about too, because I know you're doing some interesting stuff now as well. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast. I'm a big fan already. I haven't listened to all of the episodes, but to a fair amount. Yes.
Thank you. To be fair, I haven't recorded very much lately because I'm in transition and I have all these ideas. So as you know, ideas and then actually recording and then editing takes forever. Yeah.
So many things to do when publishing. It's just, there's so many things and it's so overwhelming at times.
So I wanted to talk about your From the Goddess series, which the link is below for all of you watching. I wanted to talk about, because I found out through the Divine Feminine app, someone on the Divine Feminine app said, oh, Carla, you should watch this From the Goddess. And I was like, okay, very cool. And then I saw the, you know, all the different episodes and I was like, oh my God, this looks amazing. And then Laura, as you know, when I started watching it, I was like, oh my God, like there's just so many amazing women on there. And it's just so much information. So I thought that I might ask you some questions that were coming up as I was watching actually myself. But first, maybe tell us like, what inspired you to do the series?
I've been a conscious journalist and filmmaker since around 10 years, and I first started little videos about the yoga community in Germany because I was a yoga journalist, and back then I wanted to teach myself how to make movies. And sometime I felt, okay, now I have to become a bit more professional. And I started a documentary filmmaking course in LA. And there I met a very lovely woman. She was my housemate. I lived in her house. And she was in the goddess community in the 70s and 80s in New York. And back then I was doing a film about women's circles. And she told me like, oh, you need to know about the goddess. She will inspire you. And I had no idea about it. I've never heard about her. And she gave me a wonderful magazine and also the book, The Alphabet Versus the Goddess from Professor Leonard Schlein. But somehow, I don't know, because I have a problem reading big books, to be honest, because I'm so much on the internet. So I tried to find a lecture about it, and I found it on YouTube from Professor Leonard Schlein, and he told the story how he was invited to go on an expedition to Greece and watch many of these amazing temples that are over there. And the person who was giving this lecture, she told him that most of the temples were actually consecrated for a goddess. and that goddess was worshipped, in these ancient times. And of course, I knew about Demeter and like the Greek goddesses and the Indian goddesses, but I had no idea about the Greek goddess. And well, this information dropped, and I knew I had to do a series about it. No, first I wanted to make a film about it. But as you know, once you get into the topic, there becomes so many information floating your way. And then I realized, okay, this has to become a series because I cannot put everything into one episode. And
Yes.
I could have done even more, I mean, six episodes is really not enough.
Yes, you just scratched the surface, I feel like. I mean, I think it's an excellent way that you mapped it. Maybe you can tell me how you kind of thought of that, because like in the first one, you're really hooking, I feel like, a lot of people who maybe are interested in the goddess. And I was like, oh, look at all these brilliant people behind. And then you hit us with Gimbutas, which I love, and all the other. So did you, I mean, clearly you had that all planned, but how did you come up with that strategy for the how to order them?
You mean the structure of like how they build up on each other?
Yeah.
It was just really the amount of information. I knew that I had to meet the icons because they were crucial, right? I knew that I had to make a episode about Maria Gimbutas because what she did is just groundbreaking. And I don't know, it just really flowed together very organically, I have to say. It just, I tried to build up on each other and just bring, the most important information in the first three episodes. And then from there, go, okay, the number four was what is actually the contemporary goddess worship? Then the number six, five was, and who's, what about the goddess in art? And then the sixth was, okay, but like what's happening in Germany now, in the German speaking world, because that's where I'm from. So it was just, following upon each other, I think. The first one is the introduction, really. What is the goddess?
And I know that there's a lot of matriarchal talk. I feel like I said, you, I mean, you can tell me, like, is matriarchy, do you think the skeleton, the bone, the backbone of your series? Like, are we saying, which I always say, that patriarchy, the time for patriarchy is coming to an end, and bringing back matriarchy, or maybe reconsidering what matriarchy may look like now, because of course it'll be different than what it was, but still, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think the word matriarchy is still a topic in academia. It's not really taken seriously, right? I'm studying matriarchal research now with Dr. Heide Göttner-Abendroth, and we are really trained how to present this topic to the world when we're met with so much critics, but all of the women that I filmed, they've been doing the work since 50 years, and they've seen the evidence, or let's say evidence, it's always a thing, but they have such a big amount of archaeological record that they make sense of. I don't want to use the word belief, but there's so much evidence out there in a way that proves that we must have lived in a society that was at least egalitarian, but that must have given women an honor or just recognized the importance that they brought into societies just for life in general. And I think the structure makes sense. Men also have roles in these societies, and they have important roles. They're more in the outside world, but they are also very important so that society makes sense. And I don't know. I mean, I wish that academia would take it more serious because it's so interesting, let alone the living societies that we still have on the planet. They just prove that these societies make sense because they've been on the earth since so many thousands of years, right?
Yes.
Still there.
Yeah. What do you think, based on your research in the document, what do you think are sort of the key elements of matriarchy, for example?
The key elements. I think the most important thing will probably be consensus, that every decision is made when every person in the group is of the same opinion.
Oh,
No
yes.
one is let out, like everything makes
Yeah.
sense for them. And then, of course, yeah, the mothers are being honored and worshipped and protected. then I also enjoy the idea of them being very local. You know, they have their little fields around the house, and if they produce excess, they distribute it to everyone around, and they don't want to make money out of it. They receive honor for feeding the whole community around them. And this principle would be so healthy if we could adopt that.
Yes. I think one of the problems with matriarchy and talking about matriarchy, particularly in academia, but I find anywhere, is that people either go, oh, well, then the women are in charge and the men are on the bottom. So there's this idea of subjugation, which is wrong. Or they go, oh, what you're talking about is like utopia. You know, what you're talking about is silly. And it can be quite frustrating to think how quickly we've come to believe that this is the norm, like the way we're living now, and that we can't somehow adjust to create these smaller communities or, you know.
I mean, especially in Europe, you know, the patriarchy is so old, it's 6,000 years old. It's so deeply ingrained in our DNA. So it takes a long time, I think, to really imagine that there is another possibility. But then at the same time, rents are getting higher, and there's so many situations that kind of push us into these new ideas. Like, we have to learn to live in community again and adapt new ideas. So that's pretty interesting to live in a time like this, and then also know that there are other forms possible.
Yes. And you know, I was at a Goddess festival and obviously you go to a lot of them, but I was at one just recently on Labor Day weekend, and so many women are talking about communal living, like buying a piece of land and building tiny homes on them, having little gardens. And in my mind, I'm like, that's matriarchy. Like, it's true that a lot of them are not ready for men on the land. That is true. So that may take some time because they kind of want to have a little separate space. But there's lots of homesteads, certainly all over America, everywhere people are starting to create these homesteads with everyone living on, like, you're right, the capitalist, I don't know, evolution that's happened right now is really pushing us into these communities that are not called matriarchies, but have similar values.
Yes, and Heide also talks about, for example, like this idea that not every woman wants to have a child now, but you can also raise child in communion, like with your friends, or, and I mean, you would also raise children in a matriarchy with your brothers and sisters in a communion. So you can adapt these little situations, and you can still learn it. There's still so many matriarchal elements. For example, in Europe, you know, you have the mama in Italy, and this is a matriarchal element. You can just, yeah, wherever you look, you will find these little.
And I saw one recently where about four or five single mothers bought a home together. And like you say, they're raising the children together, you know, and they're like, they're, you know, they're on the news and social media as a sort of something that's like new, but it's actually not new.
That's actually part of my new film. I just want to make one film about matriarchy now with Heide together and talk about all these different elements that are important and how could we live in future times in these societies again.
No, I think, and this is why I think your work is so important, because number one, and it's the same thing I try to do too, is try to show how we have this proof that we lived in this way. So it's possible. Of course, we may not go back to like particular ways of living now in our society, but we can learn from that, bring it forward and adapt it. And I think that's what a lot of the women in your documentary are saying. They're saying like, we're trying to keep the history alive so that at some point when people want to look at it to learn, what do we do?
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, then maybe this remembering starts. Because we have it within us, I think. And I read somewhere that especially artists, when they started to shape the figurines or they, you know, drawing figurines, that they had this remembrance. I don't know if you had it. I had some glimpses. I don't know if I can trust it,
Yeah,
but
I mean, for me, it's tough, right? Because coming out of the academic background, but it's getting easier every day, right? So for me, it's getting easier every day. What I'm finding that's kind of supporting this idea is similar to what you're doing in the sense that When you go to Greece and you go to the temples and you go to the museums, I have people that are asking me, well, how did you find out about this temple and this temple? And I'm saying to them, actually, kind of by accident, because when you go there, they have like a plethora of other temples, sanctuaries, et cetera, that you never read about in an academic text. Then you show up, and like you mentioned earlier, you realize how much of these temples are offered to the goddess. You have to ask yourself, the Greeks were these patriarchs, these, warrior cultures, supposedly. And yet, 80% of their temples are goddess temples, goddess festival. What is going on? You know?
I don't
So.
remember the word at the moment. The people, how they were called before, and before the Mycenaeans.
Yes. Before the Mycenaeans.
Yes, but yeah, I remember a specific word that Harald Tamman, Professor Harald Tamman, was talking about, because he's like doing all these research about old Europe, right? And he said that because he's a linguist, and he said that there's so many words from these people that were matriarchal, and that have that really can be traced back to, I don't know, like 4000 BC, and they have this deep rooting in goddess as well. Like you can also, I mean, work and have a look into other different areas of academia and see there before, right? Not only architecture or like archaeology.
One of the things that that reminds me of is like what we refer to as the Minoans or the ancient Cretans, right? And there is a bit of a movement to not call them Minoans as much now, right? Because that's a very Mycenaean word for them, and they were certainly goddess centered and they were certainly matriarchal centered. And now it feels like there's a bit of a battle to take back what was already labeled a palace or a throne or a king or whatever. But it's begun. People are talking more about it. It feels a bit, actually, now that I'm thinking, it feels a bit like Gimbutas. Like when you did that episode on Gimbutas, one of the, I don't know, I guess it's still surreal to me how much challenge she received because she had so much physical evidence. What was your experience doing that episode? I know you spoke to someone that was very close to her that you interviewed, her daughter-in-law.
I met an archaeologist in Lithuania, because she was organizing the centennial, the 100-year celebrations for Gimbutas in 2021, right? And she brought me to the special places that Maria liked, for example, the university or a special bridge, or and yes, she did have she felt a connection to her, but I also met, of course, Joan Mahler, who's organizing her legacy, and also Professor Harald Tamman. That was very inspiring, and also receiving this big amount of footage from her daughter, Jiville. Just looking through the pictures, I had goosebumps. It was just, oh God, I realized what kind of a responsibility I now had to make a film about her. But I connected with her spirit, and I hope that I could bring something inspiring after, there, because there was this one wonderful film by Donna Reed, Signs Out of Time.
Oh, I haven't seen that film.
Yeah, I think it's also on YouTube now because it's so old, it's not even possible, I think, to buy it anymore. So there was a lot of information already out there. So I thought, okay, how do I have to, how can I now make a follow-up of it? And luckily, in 2017, there was this big event of at I think it was called Oriental College back then, when her biggest opponent officially apologized to her because he was really making her life very hard, to say it easily. He was really he was re he, I think he trained so many young archaeologists with his set of mind, and they all attacked Maria, so she had a really hard time for so many years, and then she died, and she never really got to experience that her theories were right, even though she believed in it.
I saw that. I thought the same thing actually when I saw his apology. I was a little bit like, a little too late, too little, you know? But okay.
And it
Okay.
was also not a really heartfelt apology, right? It was just like, okay, well, she's right.
Right. Right.
I mean, then we have these experiences now, for example, with Heide, you know, Heide Göttner-Abendroth. She's also having her private university, Hagia Academy, for 40 years already because she couldn't do her work in a normal university setting. Also, you know, 40 years, just, you know, fighting against all the critics. So that's a living example of the fight that Maria Gimbutas had. Both of them Aquarius, by the way.
Wow.
Of course.
Wow. Wow.
And
That's interesting.
it is, yes. And I mean, just the work that Maria Gimbutas put in is incredible. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always envious of her language skills, because understanding languages, it's just such an important part of reading the material, right? So
Primary sources, right?
yeah, I can't imagine how amazing that must have been for her. And I was super like, wow, because languages sometimes come a little tougher for me. I have to go word by word.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
Sometimes
yeah.
with Google and sometimes with like another thing, and I'm like,
Yeah.
okay.
Wow. Respect. Yeah, I can imagine that's quite a hard work that you're doing there.
Yeah. Right. And for her, you know, 21 languages. And for Heidi too, I find her super inspirational, because I do think that these private, I want to say women-led schools, are part of our future learning, because so much is being cut at the sort of corporate institutional academic level. Classics are cut, humanities are cut, philosophy, everything's getting cut. And I totally empathize with her, because I also, like, I can't imagine teaching some of my goddess courses at the university, even though I could make a case that students will come and they're interested, they're fascinated by the material. There is this resistance of like, no, if you want to propose a course, it has to be sort of very classical format.
Yes.
And so the fact that Heidi, for example, I mean, Maria didn't have her own school per se, quite like this, but built the school, left academia in Germany, where I hear it's very, very like, there's a lot of, it's very rigid. There's a very rigid, right, academic expectation and blah, blah, blah. I find that really, like, so that is a call that has to be answered.
Absolutely. And I think there's so much demand for it, so much interest in it. And, you know, it's so fascinating to see her. She's 83 now, or maybe 84. And she has so much power because she wants this knowledge to get out. You know, she's still so inspired. It's
Yes.
beautiful to see that. At the same time, I would wish she could relax a bit more. She's
Yeah,
like
that makes sense. That makes sense.
oh.
But I think just like in Buddha, she may leave us like a library, which is what I feel about your documentary. It's a bit of a library, and perhaps we need much more of these, that then next generations can look back on and go, okay, I want to start a community, or how do we, let's say everything has crumbled. What do we do now? Oh, well, here's people who have talked about it in.
Yes, and that's my wish, really. I mean, I really want to make much more videos and films about these topics, especially, and film with, you know, the foremothers, if it's still possible, to preserve this knowledge in a way. And I think many of us have problems really reading. So it's easier to listen to a podcast or watch a film. And it's just something that I want to give back to the world, and especially to these women who have done so much work for us. And this, you know, there's so much work to be done still. So
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna
Yeah.
be in this business for the next
Yes.
year.
Yes. Yes. You said the four mothers. Who do you mean? Because maybe others don't know.
Okay. So the four mothers were the women, the feminists from the 70s that started the movement, the goddess movement, or let's say women's spirituality movement, back in Berkeley. And we have, for example, Max Dashu, who's still doing the work, Vicki Noble, Joan Mahler, Miriam Robbins Dexter,
Yes.
Charlene Spretnik, Star Goody, Joan, did I say Joan Mahler already? Arizika Razak, Hallie Eichelhardt Austin,
Yeah.
Sorry. It's been a while. I don't have all the names in my mind anymore. But many, many women, of course, from the US. But there were, of course, these movements were also in other countries.
Yes.
I wanted to start with them, but I know that there has been a big movement in the UK also, and in Germany too. I imagine in Spain. I don't know too much about other countries at this point, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I
Okay.
think.
Yeah. That makes sense. The four is meta is symbolic, the four mothers, but there's lots of mothers.
Of
Lots.
course, of course. But
Yeah.
I think they call themselves Four Mothers, and they've written a beautiful book about it. I have it here. I love it so much. In
Oh,
there you will find the stories of them, how they met Goddess and how their life was back then. It's called Women's Spirituality Movement, Elders and Visionaries. It's a wonderful book.
wow.
And okay, I can show you. All of
Yes.
them were giving me a signature into the
That's
book.
amazing, Laura. Oh my God. Oh
Yeah,
my
good for
God.
me now. Yeah. So I feel very, very fortunate that I was able to meet them.
Yes.
And I hope that I get to see them again because there's more work planned, of course. And yeah,
Yes.
it was just a big honor. And yeah, I can still believe that I was able to
Yes.
meet them.
Because the last time that I saw something that was like your documentary series was when I watched Goddess Remembered, which
Yeah.
I don't know, that was filmed in, I want to say, early 80s,
In the 90s, 90, 93, I
early
think.
90s. Oh my
91.
gosh. Yeah. It feels like so long ago. I was an undergrad, you know? And it changed my life that, and actually, ironically, that film was shown in this, it was kind of like a religious class that I was taking at the university. But then the
Wow.
following years, they took that film off the curriculum.
Of course. So sad,
Yes.
but you got to watch it at least. Wow.
Yes. And it changed my life. Like it just totally sidelined me into what? What do you mean? You know? And so when I saw your documentary, I thought, oh wow, this is something really modern. Now we're seeing them today, or this, you know, last couple of years. They get to really reflect back, like Max and the others, Vicky and the others, get to tell like what's happened in Starhawk, everybody that you have on there, like what's happened in the last 30 years too. And I thought, oh, that is so cool. It's like having a conversation with someone that you saw 20 years ago, and you're like, so what's been going on? You know, and they're still in the movement.
Yeah, that was my hope. Yeah, it's wonderful to see them again, right? After all these years. Yes, they're still in the movement, they're still friends, and they're still into Goddess.
Yeah,
I wish
yeah.
I would have seen them all together, you know, in a big reunion, but we had a COVID back then still. In
True.
2022, it was still, you know, a bit
True.
complicated for people to meet.
True. No, it was really wonderful. I really like I sent it to everybody I know, Laura. I was like, you have to watch this. Even people that are not in the goddess movement, I was like, so here's a history documentary on
I really
the
appreciate that. It's so hard to market independent documentary series, so thank you so much.
Yeah,
Community
no.
effort.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. I was also wanting to ask you about art. Like, so I know art plays a huge role in the documentary and in the lives of a lot of these activists. How do you feel? So sculptors and the woman whose name, I'm terrible with names, sorry, who had all the goddesses in her Portugal house. And then, so how did you, so how it, I mean, if you can talk about it, like going from one place to another and seeing women's art on the walls, women's art in their homes, like they're living with the goddess in this way. What were some of your like maybe favorite aspects or most interesting or cool things?
I mean, that was certainly special. There was Luisa Francia. She is a woman from the German Goddess Movement, and she has a wonderful old farmhouse in Portugal with, I think, 200 plus figurines from all over the world because she was traveling a lot. That was really special to film there because it was very mystical too and had a very beautiful vibe.
Yeah.
One of the amazing things is that I am still in contact with a few of the women, kind of like friends already. That's
Yeah.
beautiful. And I mean, yes, to see the art produced, of course, especially from the foremothers, you know, it's still so wonderful for me. Also was very special for me to go to Austria, because there is a land of the goddesses. I don't know if you saw that in episode 5.
Yes.
Beautiful women-owned land, where artists do some research on this land. And this special the floor, I don't know, the ground is the ground where some of the Venus figurines,
Yes.
female figurines, were found.
Yes.
So this is the place where, you know, people in the Paleolithic were really roaming around. So it's an amazing place, and special, of course, about it that the land is women owned, because that's a very rare case, right? Worldwide.
Yeah.
Were you asking now especially about the art episode, or just in general what was special for me?
Just in general. Yeah.
In general.
Sorry, you're like,
I
oh, Carla,
think
make it difficult.
that's a big question. Well, I think in general it really changed my life. I mean, starting with, okay, I have a different look on nature now, you know, on vegetation, on the circle of life. Then when I'm traveling now, I try to combine it with places where goddess re was revered, because it makes sense, you know, to really collect more information. Then of course I'm having a different view on Germany now, or let's say on my culture as a European woman, because I just didn't feel anything about my ancestors, because I feel in Germany we have like there's this cut, you know, the national socialism. We don't really want to think what was happening back then, so we feel our ancestor line is cut, like, because we cannot imagine what was happening back then, because it's such a taboo,
I
even though we're, you know, talking much about it from very early on in school. It still feels like, I don't know, I have like ancestors like my mother and my grandmother, but then it feels like there's a cut.
see. Interesting.
And learning about, of course, the different traumas that had happened for us, also the Inquisition, of course, but also the Christianization was a big thing for me, where I realized, like, wow, okay, that's another thing, you know. We think we come here and we just Christianized, but of course, we also have indigenous ancestors that were pagans. So just really learning about the wheel of the year again, and trying to connect with nature, with this vegetation, because I always had in mind, like, oh, I want to live somewhere else, and I don't want to be in Germany. But now I feel somehow more connected to this land here, and I learned about the different figurines, and it was wonderful. Yeah,
Yeah.
this is why I had to make the sixth episode about it, right? To really
Yeah.
know what has got us here.
I agree with you. Actually, that episode also surprised me because I think we all think about Germany in a certain way. I can't really say in what way if you asked me before, but now after I watched that episode and I saw so many goddess spaces, I was like, Germany had that much goddess worshippers? Like, I didn't. You don't connect those two things. You do think like the Celts, so you think of some in the UK and Ireland, maybe Scotland. You think Italy, of course, Greece, of course.
Friends, many,
Right.
many greens, yeah.
That's right. That's right. But Germany is never really up there in that. And so when
Yes.
I saw that, I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, there's such a softness to the forest, like the mountains, the forest, that pagan tradition. So I could feel that in your last episode. It was really a different view of
Yeah.
Germany.
I also didn't know, you know, I just knew about Venus von Hohlefels, because I mean, a lot of the country was also covered with snow for a long time, with ice in the ice age, right? So there were no figurines found in the north of it. But you have a bit younger figurines in Gunnersdorf or Ölknitz. But I mean, then, you know, you have the oldest figurine in the world, classified, right? Yes, which is the Urmutter, or the great goddess of Hohlefels. I mean, she's 40,000 years old, right? And it's incredible. She was found in 2008, which is really not long ago. And for, I think, 400 years before that, we had Venus of Willendorf. She was the oldest figurine, but she's 10,000 years younger than her, which is incredible. And yeah, and she was actually found by a young student, Alexandra Mistyriki. And her name was nowhere to be found because everybody thought, oh, the excavation leader Conard, he got all the honors, but it was actually found by a young woman. I think she was 24 back then. And the feminists in the country, they really, put in a lot of work that she would get honors for excavating her, really. And so what I find is in special, I think it's the language barrier that we don't really know so much about the German goddess scene, but it's a big one. It's really a big one. And I was just at the German Goddess Conference, and there were still, 200 women and even more that couldn't come. And it's beautiful to see that there's such a big history also in this community there. Many of them, they don't speak English, so you won't hear from them. They don't have home pages. They also have a problem with the series being on Vimeo, so now I have to produce DVDs. So yeah, you can't see their work, but it's there.
What a fascinating, well, that's a whole series right there. It's like German
Yeah,
goddess scholars and
different
other,
also.
right? Really, really fascinating. I think that there's a movement that's starting, and certainly you're starting it in Germany, but I see it a lot that, let's say, European women are now interested in pre-Christian, for me, even pre-Roman, I dare say, even go back, right? To like your earliest tribe that is not an organized, let's call it patriarchy, though. Like, so even for me here in Romania, my fascination is with the Dacians, right? Which were still a tribe of dudes, but they had some a tribe of dudes. They have some fantastic goddess figurines. And I was actually at this cave, I'm going to show you this picture. At this cave that I was at, they had, salt mine. It's fairly modern, it's nothing, whatever. But I'm walking, and then they have out of salt, they have different sculptures that they made, blah blah blah. They're all named, they're the kings of Romania, they're whatever. And in the center of the kings of Romania is this wooden, sorry, my light is, but this wooden
Yeah, I see it.
structure, which
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, old European
unnamed,
style.
so no name, no label, no nothing. And I looked around everywhere, everyone is named except for her, but she's in the center.
Okay, at least. But it's very hurtful to read this. Wow.
So again, it's like a weird, it's like, okay, I feel like it's like a weird thing that people are called to represent something, but I just don't understand why it's not celebrated, labeled, educate, like there's not an education level about it. So I asked everyone, what is this? What is this figurine? And they're like, I don't know. So now when I go to the museum in Bucharest and stuff, I'm going to see if I can find something similar.
Oh yeah, perfect. Yeah, and it's good that you start the communication with them so they maybe realize it, because this is an old story, right? I think Vicky Noble also told it in one of the episodes that, that there were drawers over drawers in the back of the museums full of female figurines, and no one bothered to exhibit them, right?
It's very, very true. And actually, I went to a museum once where they said where we found a whole new other temple of Artemis, whatever. And in the description, it says, oh, 500 figurines were found. So I asked the museum lady, who was very nice, where's these figurines? Like, I don't understand. She goes, well, we only put like four, or th they had three, that are like the nicest or biggest or whatever up front. And I said, okay, I understand that you have a museum, you have whatever, but wouldn't it be wonderful to do an exhibition where you could put, because I think seeing things in numbers, like seeing a full room full of female figurines, it's impactful. Do you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Yes,
Like,
this is huge.
I say 500, but I myself can't imagine what that would look like if we put different pieces everywhere and asked women to walk around. Like, because for the ancients, they walked around 500 because they were all at the temple.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, we're gonna have a big exhibition next year in Austria about prehistoric goddesses, so that's gonna be interesting. But of course, it would be better to have a big exhibition at a place where these figurines were actually found, so we can see what has come from the ground there. I know. Slowly but steadily, I think. When I'm talk to younger women, also they don't even know about Venus of Willendorf. I don't want to always say Venus, but it's just that the names are so recognized, so I tend to use them sometimes, even though I think they also have a racist connotation even now, right? So I'm like,
A little bit. Yeah, there's a movement to not call them Venus anymore. But I agree with you. It's kind of it's the same way I feel about the Minoans. I try to say ancient Cretans, but sometimes people go, "Ooh."
We're learning, we're learning.
We're getting there.
Yes, I mean she's really like such an icon, right? And like if people don't even know about her, so but yeah, getting there. I mean, they have a fascination. Once people see one of them and then even more, they get so fascinated, and so it's heartwarming. It's just we need to show them that it's there, right? I love your project about also mapping the different temples. That's incredible, really.
I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I mean, it's kind of like you, where you stumble into something and it kind of changes your life, and then you can't get it out of your mind, you know? Where I started finding these. The fact that people weren't labeling enough temples, and I knew there would be more. And then I think once you start to find them, for me, and then I see like in one location, there's where it's supposed to be one, end up being four or five, you have this drive to be like, okay, I have to tell people about, like, I have to document this. I have to, you know? So I don't know if that's how you feel. Like now your life
It
has been totally like, woo.
has completely changed. Because I was craving a topic that would pull me in, as much as I had like horses back then when I was younger, and then yoga. But this is perfect because it has so many different aspects that fascinate me. The art, the archaeology, the women aspect, this empowerment, political aspect, art and all of it. It's incredible. It's just so beautiful. And I feel every woman should know about this. I mean, of course, every person, but some of them enjoy
What I
this.
really also like about your documentary, and that's probably just me being a Capricorn, is that you ask them the details, you know, like the woman in Portugal with the goddesses, like the way she explained how she carried them, how she collected them, how she fit them. My brain, right, was like, oh, that feels good. Okay, and I understand how that works. Like some of them went to specific, how do you live? How do you eat? Like once you move into this movement, especially when you move away from academia, even Heidi talked a lot about how you have to leave these spaces and create these things. And then sometimes you may have to give up food or rent or money or whatever in order to do, you know. I felt like that was really like the reality, the tangible aspect of this path. Like we are all wanting to be on the path, but there's also that reality of the challenges that we have to overcome. Sometimes you want to build something beautiful, but to build it takes years, right? It takes packaging.
Yes, and sometimes you also just have to live with the idea that some things are not possible in this lifetime because you have chosen a route that is too against everything that is normal. And just, I don't know, just accept it in a way. Right? I mean, also, there was one situation. Christina Biaggi, she's one of the artists. I don't know if you remember this part when she talks about this goddess temple that she wanted to create where people would walk. The entrance would be through the vulva, and she wouldn't get the funding, and she still wants to build it with her 85 years, I think, but she could never realize it. Oh,
And actually, now that you say that, it reminds me. So one of my dreams is also to rebuild a temple. So I always talk about building my own temple on my own land because that will allow me to build, but that's small. But I've had people who have approached me about perhaps building virtual temples where
yes.
put in those virtual glasses and you're walking through those temples. So far, everything's in theory, you know, because obviously, again, those things require funding.
Yes, but maybe you could work together with students, of certain disciplines. And I mean, I would love to see that. I also love these images now created with AI, where you see that these ancient temples in Greece were actually colorful, right?
Yes. Yes, Ulrika. Ulrika does that. She might be wonderful for you to at some point add to your I want to say her name correctly. I think it's Ulrika Brickman. She is the leading artist at doing those reconstructions. I'll look up her name. I'm saying, yeah, Ulrike Brinkman. Yes. And she does the coloring, and she did the chroma at the Met. And yeah, and she did all she does a bunch of stuff in Germany, especially at the Liebig House Museum. That's where
Okay,
she
write
is.
down her name. Wow, that sounds so
I'm gonna
interesting.
send you her Instagram because
Yes,
I
thank you.
think, first of all, we've had conversations where we talk about a lot of things you and I talk about here. But her challenges, her husband is a highly respected PhD classicist. She was an artist and then sort of went into academia and became obsessed with figuring out what colors were on the ancient paintings and all these tests and repainting. Anyway, one of the fascinating challenges for her and maybe for us too is like trying to get people to understand that these were actually colored in like that is a fact, right? Not that we're just coloring them now for fun. And I agree with you, like thinking about what that might have looked like in the ancient world, walking through so much color, you know?
I can't even imagine. I mean, I also like them to be in white. Very majestic and white, but in colorful, wow, why not? Yeah, I really love to mix, the ancient with the modern or futuristic situations. I like the bridge building in general, also, from the esoteric sides, maybe to the academia. I really want to everybody to work together again and not to be so exclusive. And it's just, yeah, that's I think one of the biggest frustrations in my life, really, that there's especially now such a big division in so many topics. And I think this would be really an important characteristic that we need to develop again in the next 20 years at least, of Pluto and Aquarius, just trying to work together again. There would be so many things possible, right?
It's funny, because it feels almost like there's a bit of a backlash again where the labels in museums are changing now from goddess to sometimes woman to sometimes person, which kind of irks me a little bit. Like, so the academic in me understands that why they say they can't say goddess, but the woman in me also feels like, I don't know, it feels like that's gaslighting a bit. You know what I mean? It's like,
I mean, we just need to see that there were 80% female figurines found, right?
right.
Of them.
That's
So
right.
it means something. Yeah, I think it's
That's
important.
right. That's right. That's right. I did a whole rant on one of these episodes where I went to go see this exhibition called The Kings of Europe. And they start off with these goddess figurines that sit in a circle that are Eastern European. And they're very clearly bird goddess figurines. And they say, oh, these are a gathering of women just sitting around in a circle talking. And it's 2023, Laura. Like, so there's a bit of I don't know what it is. I mean, certainly it's pushback, but
I
it's
know.
unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, the word goddess is still such a big problem for many, right? But at least call them female figurines then, or I don't know.
Right.
Important, yeah. And I also enjoy, these figurines that are non-binary, maybe even. I think Maria Gimbutas also talked about it, that there's a big amount of them also found. That's also important, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, especially the female figurines with children in their hand from the Neolithic period, or the big bellied Paleolithic ones. We're still in the phase of figuring out why there were so many of them found,
Yes.
or not even in this phase yet, right? Because it's still ignored.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so
Yeah.
I think so. This is why I think sometimes putting them all out there is important, because then you could see if it, and I think that's part of my work too, is like I take so many pictures everywhere I go, because I'm hoping that when people say, oh, whatever, I can be like, and I haven't even posted them, because sometimes I feel like there's so many, like, for example, goddesses on thrones. Oh, I mean, I have hundreds of pictures of different artifacts. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it, but I feel like I need like a massive, I don't know, page or something where I can put them all up. You know what I mean? To give some people a visual
Yeah.
of just this particular style of figurine, thousands and thousands of them.
If you could do that, yes, please. I mean, just like Max Dashu, right? With her posters, they're so important because we, with our mirror neurons, right, we need to see, to believe, and to recognize.
Yeah, because then it's a bit, it's a much more undeniable to say, okay, fine, it's a woman sitting here, but clearly these are in every burial site, these are in every home. I mean, come on, clearly they had
Absolutely.
the, and to be honest, we don't know if they belong to women or men, right? Like, we don't know who had them close to them. Could have been everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do feel there's an opening, especially now with, for example, the female figurine of Hohlefels or the Great Mother. There is one wonderful archaeologist, her name is Dr. Sibylle Wolf, and she is doing a lot of research now about this different lines that that she has, especially in terms of pregnancy, you know. They're really talking much more about this fact now. And I feel that they're also a bit open to this idea of a matriarchy. She won't openly say, yes, it was a matriarchy, but it's getting there in a way. May hopefully.
Yeah, that's actually quite fascinating, actually, that kind of study. Yeah, I remember her talking about it, and having it's perhaps women that will have that bridge between,
Yes, we need
you
the
know.
women in archaeology again for that because they are interested in the topic, right? It's because it's, yeah, closely related, I must say.
Exactly. No, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I'm just looking at my questions here. I do want to ask you. I know I have a ton of them, because I just in case I wanted to ask you something, but I do want to ask you about the future of the series, and if you have any plans, and what does it look like, and all this kind of stuff, like long-term plans. I don't know, 5-year plans and 1-year plan, that kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I always like to imagine like, okay, in the next 5 years, this is going to happen. But making films is so unpredictable. So I just have to go with the flow. But what I'm working on at the moment is this just mo one movie about matriarchy. And then I collected a lot of research material already for the next season of From the Goddess, where I want to focus on specific regions of the world. So how and where was the goddess in India, in Africa, in the Americas? You know, I know it's a huge area and it's probably very impossible again to make one episode about a special region, but I'm gonna try and see how it's gonna come out.
No, I think that's so fascinating, because the series as a whole can really serve, like I said, as a library for, right?
And you know, that can also follow up another project to be a bit more specific. But I also, for me, you know, I realize how much it helped me to map the German-speaking area with Goddess, and so I want to do that with other countries or regions as well to really have a deeper understanding. And maybe we can also film together when you are in Greece or in Turkey, and for this film about, Anatolia, Mesopotamia. I don't know again how big this region is going to be, but
It's big, it's big. It's funny because it seems we have this in common. I just saw a hunter goddess from Lithuania today, you know? And so I'm working on Artemis of Ephesus and Anatolia, but I'll call her of Ephesus there. And then I wanted to do Artemis of Sicily, just also a project. And then I wanted to do Artemis in the Balkans or Eastern Europe. And today I saw it in Lithuania. So I totally understand your, it's like She's everywhere, and it's very important in a way also to give those women in those areas at least a start. Like,
Yes.
right? Here's a confirmation of goddesses you can find for
Exactly.
ancestors.
And I mean, we have this incredible work from Max Dashu. I mean, she has really mapped, I think, female figurine finds from all over the world, or female histories. But yeah, I mean, she is called herself, I think, like a librarian, because
Yes.
she's not traveling so much, right?
Yes.
Sadly, I think she didn't have funding, so it would have been amazing if she could have gone to all these incredible places.
Yes.
But yeah, there needs to
Yes.
be more and more and more.
Yes. When I saw in your documentary that you showed, I've never seen Max's. I don't know that she's ever shown her
Oh, she was very
drawers.
self-conscious of
Oh
showing
my.
her archive. Yeah,
It
it's
was
wonderful.
so incredible though. Like it made me feel like a bit like the Library of Alexandria in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like I was
Yeah.
like, yes, she has like physical,
Yeah.
I don't know, that has so much value, right? So much value.
Wonder if this big library in Alexandria, if it hadn't burned down, if there would have been books about female history. Probably yes.
Yes. Yes. And female authors that we lost.
Yeah.
Philosophers, right? All these writers, poets, etc. We lost a lot of that in that fire, and then consequently after that. But so yeah, in a way, I would guess at some point, perhaps when we get a little bit older, we become part of the record keepers or the record builders.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I just hope that more younger women also find their expressions, in podcasts or whatever, and just finding their own expressions, really, because we just have to flood the market with this information. If academia won't give it to us, we have to find it ourselves
Yes,
to spread
yes,
the message.
yes. Well,
Yeah.
in part, this is why I started my school too, just I'm sure like everyone else, is because you want to have an outlet for women who may be interested in this case, Artemis or other things, because everyone has their own, but at least we have an outlet for that, or else you end up going to college for classics and all you hear about is dates and wars and blah, blah, blah.
Yes. And I told Heide that I feel a bit sad, because I am through the study now with her, studying matriarchal research. I realized that I would be so interested in studying ethnology,
Right.
or anthropology, I think it's called in the US or in Canada. And she told me, like, yes, you can do it, but you will be very disappointed, of course, because they have this patriarchal lens on everything. And yeah,
Yes.
so I don't know if I'm gonna do that. Just
Yes.
look for material, which is enough anyways.
Yeah. No, you're right. That is a lot of my, that has been a lot of my inspiration, is that I have students at the university, because I sneak in stuff, in my classics courses or in my religious studies courses. And they will ask me, like, Carla, where can we learn more about that? And that's when I started realizing, like, there is a thirst for that knowledge from all students, all, and this may be the future of access to that knowledge. You don't have time to get it while you're in university, or you just don't, you can't afford to go to university anymore.
Right. Well,
Yeah.
see.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you. All right. So I'll put all the information below and anything else that you might want to send me. Thanks so much.
Much.
Go
Thank
watch
you
the
so much.
documentary, everyone.
Yes, and you can also watch single episodes. I always said that you don't have to get the whole series. You can just try with the first one and see if it's for you. And it's just, I think it's the most comprehensive one, where you just learn about goddess in general, and then you can see if it interests you more. But I
Yes.
think the listeners of you, they're already very
Yes. Yes. And I
Yeah.
find that a lot of viewers are interested in the, like, also the academic background and
Yeah,
actual,
that's
like,
important.
visual background, which you do so well in your, I mean, for myself too. And like, I just sat through all six of them in 2 days. I was like, yeah,
Nice.
like the videos, the backgrounds. I was like, you did so much research, and I'm a visual learner, so I really liked
Yeah.
seeing that. Yeah. But thank you so much for joining me, and go watch her documentary, you guys.
Yeah, and looking forward to maybe film with you next year. Let's see.
All right,
Thank you.
goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.